Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Well, this is episode 104, so right away I want to say safe journeys to my friend and brother Rob Lewis. He is once again serving his country in the Special Forces. He will still be doing his podcast, Far From Centered, only it will be some really long distance phone calls. So Godspeed, Brother Lewis, and thank you for all that you do for this country. And thanks to all of our military for what they do. If you haven't checked out Brother Rob's book, Love Me When I'm Gone, or listened to his podcast, give those things a chance. I think that you will really like them. Additionally, I should mention, I'm on every episode of Far From Centered presenting a famous Freemason. So that leads me into another podcast, The Winding Stairs. The Winding Stairs is a great podcast. It is Masonic in nature, and this is an incredible introspection show. It's hosted by Brother Juan Sepulveda, and if you didn't know, he is also a professional artist. He is the man behind Masonic Fundraiser, where you can buy artwork, and he donates proceeds from the sale to your lodge. It's kind of a unique program. And he's also the one who commissioned these really awesome, one-of-a-kind white leather aprons. I actually bought one for Brother Rob Lewis when he was raised to take with him overseas. The craftsmanship was astounding, so please check out Brother Juan Sepulveda's podcast, The Winding Stairs, and send him a note to let him know that his art is awesome. You can follow both of these brothers on Twitter as well. Brother Rob Lewis is at FFC, or Far From Centered, and also at Rob Lewis. Brother Juan Sepulveda, you can follow him on Twitter at WindingStairs33. I also want to say I added some links on the website, www.wcypodcast.com. That's our home website. And you will notice at the navigation bar on the top, I added a page which showcases every episode where we had a special guest. It's an easy way to find which episode that you wanted to hear if there was a special guest on. There is a player for each one, so all you have to do is click play on the one that you want to hear again. I added a photos page, which is a mirror of our Instagram page, also direct links to the Midnight Freemasons, Far From Centered, and the Winding Stairs podcast. So please check those out. And let's just jump right into this week's first piece. Blending the Legendary and Historical in Freemasonry, The New Age, February 1951. In deciphering ancient history, there is always the question as to how much is legendary and how much is historical. With an institution like Freemasonry whose teachings reach back into thousands of years, such problems inevitably present themselves. There are indications of Masonic teachings as far back as 22 centuries before Christ. In one of the oldest classes of China will be found a directive that, quote, officers of government apply the compasses, end quote. Writing in the Pentagram, 1949, the official Masonic Gazette of the District Grand Lodge of Eastern Archipelago, compromising the Malaysian area, C.L. Edwards calls attention in an article, Legend or History, which, to the fact that in the 5th century B.C., a work entitled Great Learning says that a man should refrain from doing others what he would not want done to himself. This, the writer characterized as acting on the square. In a similar manner, Confucius and his disciple Mencius measured proper conduct with the compasses and the square, together with a level and the marking line. The historic stones of ancient Egypt give further proof, were any needed. Mysterious rituals practiced at Memphis are described by Plutarch. There were two groups of these orders. The lesser one allowed a large membership, and the greater one restricted its membership. The lesser embraced dialogues and ceremonies and had signs and passwords, but the greater order confined its membership to the few who proved that they were capable of receiving the secrets of science, philosophy, and religion. These had to undergo trial by ordeal before they were held eligible to receive by symbols the highest wisdom to which man had up to that time attained, namely, the fine arts and the laws of nature as well as of faith. A central theme, that of the immortality of the soul, runs through many of these ancient mysteries, and, spiritually at least, Masonry is held by many to be the descendant of the great ancient mysteries. For instance, along about 1800 BC, the Grecian mysteries depicted the death of Dionysus. There was a stately ritual which led the neophyte from death to immortality. Similarly, the Druids, as far north as England, conducted candidates from bodily cerise to spiritual perpetuity. A considerable time prior to the coming of Christ, the mysteries preached the same general theme, birth, life, death, immortality. Plato's interpretation of the mysteries was that they were intended to teach purity, to lessen and, if possible, cure cruelty, improve morals and manners, and to instill a strong consciousness of human responsibility. There was clearly no mystery as to what was taught. The only secrecy was as to the rites and symbols used. The fortified isle in Lake Como of northern Italy was the seat of a colony of architects known as the Comesines. They had fled from the ruin of Rome. In the Roman Empire, special privileges were extended to the colleges of architects. They were presided over by a master and wardens. They used the simple tools of the builder as their emblems. The ruins of Pompeii have revealed much information about these architects who had settled on the fortified isle in Lake Como. They are credited with having carried their knowledge of architecture to Germany, France, Spain, and England. Masonic authorities have characterized them as Freemasons because they were builders of a privileged class, relieved of the duty of paying taxes, absolved from servitude, and free to travel about in times of feudal bondage. In England, their descendants are credited with being responsible for many of England's most magnificent structures of the early centuries, and one fact stands out to show the camaraderie of these architects and builders. During the reign of Henry II and many years after the arrival of St. Augustine, there were built in England over 150 cathedrals, churches, and monastic buildings, and despite the ravages of World War II, many of these magnificent buildings exist today and reveal superb symmetry and exquisite beauty, yet the name of no one individual is associated with any of these buildings. The theory is that they were built by communities or lodges of operative masons living in the precincts of each building during the process of its erection, which must have been a long and laborious undertaking. When the operative element and the speculative masonry gradually merged, they remained a system of morality veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. A book setting forth a history of the Company of Masons of the City of London, published in 1375, shows that the word Freemasonry appears to have been used in England for the first time about the year 1350. The initiatory ceremonies of our prehistoric ancestors were true origin of Freemasonry according to some Masonic scholars. Masonry is an answer to those unexpressed yearnings for light, which is to be found in all religious systems, and prove that the spiritual basis of Masonry is as old as the human race itself. As Mr. Edwards so aptly states, quote, "On the floor of the lodge, men of all races and creeds are able to meet on common ground and make their devotions to a creator who is neither God nor Buddha, nor Allah, nor Brahma, nor Jehovah, but who is yet each and all of these." The symbols of Masonry, old and simple and universal, still have magnetic appeal to bring men together in a bond of integrity and brotherhood and humanity. All right, next, I need to mention our ways to support the show. We have apps for Android, Apple, and Windows 8 devices which stream the show. Rob, I can already stream this show. Why would I pay $2 to get the app? That's a question I hear all the time. Well, many reasons. First, it supports the show by offsetting the costs. Secondly, you get PDF versions of the papers that we read on the show every week. Third, you get a new Masonic wallpaper for your mobile device every week. Fourth, certain times a year, I distribute large Masonic volumes. Our first year, I gave away a PDF of Morals and Dogma through the app. Now, we're also on Stitcher Smart Radio. If you're already on Stitcher, check it out. If not, download it, register for free, use the promo code WhenceCamey with no spaces, and they send us $1 to benefit the show, as well as you get entered into a cash drawing for $100. And if you don't want an app, we do have donations, and we run those donations through PayPal. And you can find the donation button on our website at www.wcypodcast.com. Lastly, check out our affiliate, Onnit Labs. Links to it are on our website under the headline, Feed Your Brain, on the right-hand side of the page, about halfway down. You can click through and use the coupon code WCY when you check out, and you'll get 10% off your order. All right, next, I have another paper that I just really like. It was written fairly recently, about 12 years ago. It's entitled Wisdom, Strength, and Beauty. And this piece was submitted by Richard D. Marcus, George Washington, 1776 Lodge, FNAM, number 337, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Triads are groups of three ideas or objects. Triads appear in nature, politics, and religion. To early man, the cosmos consisted of the sun, the moon, and the stars. He called the natural elements earth, wind, and fire. He could see triads in the three-leaf clover. He knew he lived in a three-dimensional world. In politics, the U.S. Constitution established three branches of government: legislative, executive, and judicial. And in religion, most faiths teach fealty to God, your neighbor, and yourself. All are arranged in intriguing triads of ideas. Let us endeavor to understand some of the power in triads, both historically and us as Masons. Before we became aware of triads, we think in opposite or dual concepts. Developmental learning theorists easily prove that infants learn through simple stimulus and response events. Touch a newborn baby's cheek. Her instinctive reflex will be to turn her head in that direction. She quickly learns to identify her mother's voice from all others. As language is acquired, knowledge can be gathered by asking why. After a child asks a question, she is rewarded with an answer. The pattern engages a pair of concepts, or dyads. Even as we advance in learning, we make decisions using dyads by giving reasons for and against an action. A straightforward method for determining a course of action involves drawing a vertical line on a paper and arranging the pro and con arguments on either side. Furthermore, Socratic teaching methods train students by asking questions. The student must provide the answer or else the teacher must supply it. Catechisms are similarly simple teaching devices for youth. The first question in the Westminster Confession asks, "What is the chief end of man?" The student replies, "The chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever." The question is neat. The answer is clean. This is an uncomplicated style of learning for the young. But as men, we become more complex. Answers tend to include modifiers such as, "On one hand this, but on the other hand that." Dualistic thinking is insufficient for more advanced analysis. Socratic methods tend to give way to Hegelian philosophy that was based on threes: thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. Inspired by Christian insights and grounded in his mastery of a fund of knowledge, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel attempted to answer all questions, natural, human, and divine, using dialectical reasoning that swung from thesis to antithesis and back again to a richer synthesis. To opposing forces resolve into a creature wholly different, like the cross-fertilization of two different rose bushes producing a more perfect hybrid. Higher learning tended to use triads. Among the seven liberal arts and sciences are grammar and rhetoric. Grammar uses subject, verb, and object, three things. Adjectives are inflected into good, better, and best, also triads. Grammatical tenses are conjugated into run, ran, and have run. Rhetoric is similarly infused with triads. A rhetorical comment is a phrase meaning tangential or unnecessary words. Yet expert rhetoricians reveal much about the persuasive power of words and ideas in orderly lists. In Latin, word order doesn't matter. In English, man bites dog demonstrates that word order matters. We remember the three things that abide, which are faith, hope, and charity. The order matters. The Bible did not say charity, faith, and hope. We remember from the French Revolution equality, liberty, and fraternity. A triad providing citizens with equality and liberty produces the ideal of fraternity. Rhetoricians argue that the ear wants to hear the most complex at the end of the list as it finishes or completes the first two thoughts. Triads appear in many ancient systems of thought. In numerology, triads are seen as a combination of odd, one, and even, two, that sums to three. Three becomes a symbol of perfection. In many ancient cultures and mystic philosophies, threes also appear very early in geography and in geometry. We can find any location on a plane by reference to three points. Even anthropological artifacts reflect triads. From the union of marriage comes a child. The complication of three elements is needed to provide sufficient complexity to achieve an idealized perfection. Triads are also prominently employed in lodges and Masonic writings. Why triads dominate over dyads or quartets of ideas may not conclusively be known, but speculative masonry permits us ample opportunity to reflect on the reasons. Threes appear prominently in the lecture of the Winding Stairs as we are shown the first three steps. They remind fellow crafts of the 3 degrees of masonry and the three principal officers of the lodge. We learn that the lodge is not singular. It is not dual. It is a plural with a minimum of three, similarly displaying the three greater lights and the three lesser lights. As the furniture of a lodge, they are separate symbols with meanings and lessons, but the fact that they are grouped into threes is not accidental. As the three lesser lights are named, they are said to help make Masons better men. Naturally, we could have added other virtues to the list, maybe patience, fortitude, peacemaking, but the fact is that there are three, and they draw your attention. The three greater lights parallel the three lesser lights. First displayed on the altar, the Holy Bible of scriptures from other religions. The Holy Bible is a collection of writings, histories, and moral teachings that provide guidance in our actions. They are sometimes known as wisdom literature. Indeed, one of the books in the Apocrypha during the intertestamental period is the Book of Wisdom. King Solomon is recalled as a wise king, whose wisdom was demonstrated by the story of two women, claimants for a baby. Furthermore, that wisdom is symbolized atop the worshipful master by his hat, the crown of the ruler who is wise. The square is the second great light. A right angle is the key to forming a strong wall or a proper column. A wall that will withstand the vicissitudes of weather and seasons. Being on the square is commended to all master masons. We are charged to follow the rules and regulations of the craft and of the country in which we live. We see the square as a symbol of right order in society. The senior warden represents strength. He is the strong supporter of the worshipful master, yet it is intriguing that the symbol of strength, the square, is worn as the jewel of the worshipful master. The third symbol placed on the altar is the compasses. We use the compass to draw an arc, or a perfect circle. There is a beauty and perfection in structures built with arches and celestial windows. Cathedrals featured rose windows over the altar, which were circular stained glass windows beautifully adorned for the contemplation of the glory of God. We are further taught a message hidden in the compasses. Beauty is orderly, balanced, and under control. So too, the junior warden talks of the arc of the sun as it rises to the meridian height, as being the beauty and the glory of the day. Hence, we repeat patterns of wisdom, strength, and beauty in all three officers, as well as the greater and lesser lights. The rhetoric of listing wisdom, strength, and beauty in this order places importance on beauty. Beauty is an odd ideal for a fraternity, yet beauty is seen as the resolution of a life that is brimming with wisdom and strength. Men who exhibit wisdom and strength create harmony. Harmony is itself a characteristic of beauty in social settings, as it is in aesthetics. In the Aura Lodge, a German-speaking lodge in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, the German word for beauty is Schönheit, which involves balance and symmetry, as in the beauty of a well-built structure. Perhaps we can visualize that lodge filled with wise and strong men who produce better men in a manly sense of symmetry, strength, and beauty. The three degrees emphasize three stages of life. Our youth and adolescence are emphasized in our training as an entered apprentice. Our manhood and useful work are keys to the fellowcraft degree, and contemplating our own mortality is vividly illustrated in our third degree. The posting monitors used by all three degrees today begin with three grand principles of brotherly love, relief, and truth. Meetings and lodge are designed to reinforce these three principles as we practice fraternity, charity, and virtue, three moral guides. Triads are used by lodges to train our minds. As we grow in understanding, we will tend to use more and richer triads. Intelligence, force, and harmony provide elegant synonyms used today for wisdom, strength, and beauty. Likewise, religion, law, and morals are pillars of Masonic teaching. By religious study and contemplation, we search out wisdom. By the force and rule of law, we establish a strong and orderly society. And by inculcation of personal morality, we strive for beauty in our private and public lives. The lesson for us is that the triads used in our rituals and in our lectures are purposeful and helpful to us. Let us strive for perfection by becoming better men in wisdom, strength, and beauty. Next is this week's famous Freemason, Eddie Rickenbacker. Judy Gordon from the Midnight Freemasons quoted him once as saying, "I'd rather have a million friends than $1 million." Eddie Rickenbacker was born October 8, 1890 in Columbus, Ohio. With little formal schooling and a succession of jobs behind that, he began working for a railroad car manufacturing firm in 1905. There, he developed a deep interest in internal combustion engines and engine-powered vehicles. He began driving racing cars at 16. He became a regular at the Indianapolis 500 from its first year in 1911. By the time the United States entered World War I, he was internationally famous as a daredevil speed driver and held world speed record of 134 miles per hour. In 1917, he enlisted in the Army and went to France as a member of General John J. Pershing's motor car staff. With help from Colonel William Mitchell, he secured a transfer to the Air Service in August, took pilot's training in early 1918 with rank of captain, was assigned to the 94th Aero Pursuit Squadron. The 94th, which adopted the famous Hat in the Ring insignia, was the first U.S. flying unit to participate actively at the front, fighting the flying circus commanded by the German ace, Baron Manfred von Richthofen. In May 1918, Rickenbacker succeeded to command the 94th in the temporary rank of major. By the end of the war, the 94th had downed 69 enemy craft, of which Rickenbacker, the ace of aces, accounted for 26, 22 airplanes, 4 observation balloons. He earned every decoration possible, including the Medal of Honor awarded in 1931 for his lone attack on 7 German planes, 2 of which he downed on September 25th, 1918. His fighting, the Flying Circus, appeared in 1919. Returning to the United States, a hero, he organized in Detroit the Rickenbacker Motor Company. The company was dissolved in 1926, and the next year he bought a controlling interest in the Indianapolis Speedway, which he returned until 1945. He later worked at the Cadillac division of General Motors Corporation and then was associated with a number of aircraft manufacturers and airlines. In 1935, he became general manager and vice president of the Eastern Airlines. 3 years later, he became president and director of the line. His experience and technical knowledge prompted his appointment as special representative of Henry L. Stimson, Secretary of War, to inspect air bases in the Pacific Theater of War in 1942. In October of 1942, on his second mission over the Pacific, his B-17 crashed some 600 miles north of Samoa, and he and 7 more, one of whom died, were yet adrift on a rubber raft with only fish and rainwater to sustain them. After 23 days, he was rescued, and after a 2-week rest, he resumed his tour. After the war, he returned to Eastern Airlines, where he remained from 1954 as chairman of the board until his retirement in 1963. He passed away in Zurich, Switzerland, on July 23, 1973. That's it for this week. Please remember to find us on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. Rate us on iTunes and check out our other Masonic podcast partners, The Winding Stairs and Far From Centered. Links to those are on our website under the podcast partners and also now in the navigation bar at the top. Don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 articles a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Always new stuff, always a good read. They aren't long articles, usually short pieces, and always kind of fun. So check it out. Just click the links for the Midnight Freemasons on our website at www.wcypodcast.com or go directly there by using the URL www.midnightfreemason.blogspot.com. We are working still on the .com. Please show some love to the Masonic businesses I have links for. I don't get any kickbacks or anything from these guys. They're just good brothers with good products. Todd, Charles, and Rob all have amazing books. Jeff Koch has a wonderful business in water purification. He provides all the needs for the Mojave County, parts of Phoenix, and all over the United States. Anyway, I'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level, everybody. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.